Hey everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the TRX Procast. Today, we're honoured to have Andy Kane, founder of Zero Retreats, join us for an insightful discussion on transformative masculinity, holistic well-being, and the power of TRX training. As we release this episode during Mental Health Month, our aim is to raise awareness and support for those who may be struggling. Now, Andy's life journey has been nothing short of extraordinary, from representing his country in running to working with global giants like Nike, Puma, and Foot Locker. Andy's story is a testament to the highs and lows of human experience. However, beneath the surface of success, Andy grappled with burnout, disconnection, and a relentless pursuit of high performance. In our conversation, Andy candidly shares how his always-on mentality led to a profound awakening, a shift towards holistic well-being and genuine high performance. He emphasises the importance of reconnecting with oneself, tapping into inner wisdom and creating space for growth and for healing. Now, Andy's approach to well-being encompasses a wide array of practices, from mental resilience to physical vitality, from mindfulness to adventure. He believes that the wisdom to unlock our highest potential already exists within us. We just need to give ourselves the space to ask the questions and the silence to hear the answers. As we explore Andy's journey of self-discovery, we'll also dive into the transformative power of TRX training. Andy shares his insights into how TRX training serves as more than just a workout, it's a lifestyle. With its versatility and accessibility, TRX training becomes a tool for individuals to incorporate regular movement into their lives, aligning perfectly with the principles of transformative masculinity and holistic well-being. So whether you're seeking to thrive in life, performance, or both, Andy's wisdom offers a roadmap for embracing transformative masculinity, holistic well-being, and the power of TRX training. Join us as we embark on this journey together. Welcome to the TRX Procast.
Yeah, it's quite a story. I'll condense it as easily as I can, I think. Yeah, so my name's Andy Kane. My initial background, I guess, from a teenager was I was an athlete. I was a runner, long distance runner. My father was a top athlete, 28-minute 10K guy back in the 70s when they all ran in military boots and on pebble tracks.
Yeah.
When life was tougher. And a lot of his friends, his best mates that he would hang around with, Brendan Foster, Mickey McLeod, Charlie Spedding, they were always in my life. So I was always surrounded by athletic greats, thinking, oh, that's normal. Everybody is an Olympic medalist.
Yeah.
And that I was never actually like pushed into it at all, actually starting life as a mountain bike racer, actually.
Okay.
When the sport was just coming through, and then gradually discovered that I was a better runner than I was a cyclist, funny enough. And of course, Dad was really supportive when I made the transition myself. And yeah, from the ages of like 16, through to, well, when I eventually retired at 31, I was like, I was focused completely on getting to world championships, Olympics, going all the way, making teams. So the real long-term vision and goals, but it was always around, yeah, I was always focused on the elite athlete, elite end of, and the elite side of things, if you like.
Yeah
I wasn't doing it for fun at all. I didn't get, I got the fun out of the end result. And yeah, as I was moving up through the ranks, making teams, running for Great Britain, representing Scotland as well, which was my mother country. Just got really focused on again, like the long-term goal and all the, and just building an understanding of periodization, coaching, nutrition, all the things that I needed to move this vehicle, which I was very separate from. So like, okay. I was a mind and I'm just using this body. Like this is a tool, which ultimately, when I came through all my latter half of the journey, was like, no, it's all one, the mind body symbiosis. So yeah, as I came towards the end of my career, it was like, okay, I need to go and get a job. I need to start earning some better money. I wasn't that quick, unfortunately. I still ran 28 minutes for 10K, which still I was really proud of.
Yeah,
still got to the world championships.
And what was that experience like, getting to the world championships?
Well, it was funny actually, because the funny story here is it was the World Cross Country Championships that I made, again, which was my main goal. And it was in 2005, Saint-Étienne in France. And it was like part of a horse racing circuit. So it was really flat. And they put like artificial little bumps and mounds in it. And in the races, you stand, there's like a team of 10 of us, 8 of us, 10 of us. And you stand in the order that you finished in the trials, pretty much. And all the countries are lined up next to each other. Okay, so in the front row of the British team, there was Mo Farah, there was a guy called Glyn Tromans, and I finished second in the trial, so I was like second row back. Mo got an allowed entry because he was a lot quicker than us anyway. We weren't
Yeah.
gonna not allow him to run, and so there was Mo Farah, Glyn, and then myself in second row, and I was actually dealing with a double hernia at the time as well, so I was pretty much like strapped together. I
Yeah.
was like a bird with his wings clipped, you couldn't sprint. And the team next to us was the Ethiopian team, and the team to our left was the Kenyan team. And in the
All right.
Kenyan team, you had Eliud Kipchoge, the guy who ran sub 2 hours
Wow.
for the marathon, and all of his other incredibly efficient mates over distance. And then in the team to our right, the Ethiopians, Kenenisa Bekele, multiple world record holder, and all of his mates. And the gun went off, and it was just like, boom, that was the last we saw of the that was the last I
Yeah.
saw of the Kenyans and the Ethiopians anyway. But it was just a colossal experience. Yeah, to be on the start line with the best of the best of the best in the world. And that for me was my ultimate goal. Just incredible. Yeah, just
I
incredible.
imagine. Yeah, I bet
Yeah.
that was an experience. So yeah, after that, then you was decided that you need to look for a job.
Yeah, so join Nike, which again, that elite competitive being the best, working for the best was obvious in me. So I joined Nike. When Nike loved that as well, because I was still running at the time, just sort of tailing off my focus there. And it was great because Nike as a brand is all about the athlete. And they
Yeah.
say the athlete, if you have a body, you are an athlete there. It's to bring inspiration and innovation to every athlete in the world is their mission statement. It might have changed since then. I think it's pretty much the same, but they also make the reference of if you have a body, you are an athlete. So we are all athletes, just the level that you're at, it doesn't matter. Everyone's got their edge. High in innovation, quite a competitive culture as well, which I really thrived on. And then ended up coming to the end of that period. And then I became the elite athlete manager for the Great North Run, which essentially meant me inviting all of the best athletes in the world to come to the Great North Run and race in the Great North Run. And that
Right.
requires dealing with agents and some appearance fees and so on. So that was great because it was a sport I loved, a sport I knew all the athletes, the characters, and it was just a brilliant, and it was in the build-up of 2012. And then we did
Right,
the
okay.
City Games, and then we did the Great City Games. We brought Usain Bolt to Manchester, sprinting up the street. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah, so that was my responsibility. It was
Okay.
Brendan sat down one day and he said, right, after Beijing, he was like, right, we're going to do great swim events. We're going to do sprint events in the cities as well, where we have the running events. Andy, can you go out there and get the best swimmers in the world and get the best sprinters in the world? And by the way, I want Usain in Manchester next year in 2009. And I didn't know much about sprinting at all. I certainly knew less about swimming, but in fact, yeah, I just went out there and spoke to the agents. And that was, again, like that's another podcast in itself, that story.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
And yeah, just working in the build-up of 2012 was amazing, especially with all of our British athletes, Mo, Jess, Greg, everybody below that as well. They're the three obvious ones. And just to see the success of a lot of the junior athletes building up through the ranks, even the swimmers as well, like Kerry-Ann, Cassie Patton, Dave Davis, they all won medals in Beijing Olympics at the open water. And so working with those guys, and swimmers are a different breed to most athletes out there, I think, that I'm used to. Very, very disciplined. Yeah, just it's a tough sport swimming. And so it was really
Yeah.
nice to work with them and had a lot of friendships since then. And then after 2012, it was like, it's not going to get much better than that, I think, in the UK. So I stepped back into the world of sports industry. Went back to Puma this time. The general manager there, we used to work together at Nike, and he asked me to come to Puma, which was amazing. And then moved to the Netherlands with Puma, managing the Foot Locker business. And then Foot Locker asked me to join them. And that was when things started to really, I'd been like this high achieving focus, like always on, sleep when I'm dead, very, very self-focused. You could call it selfishness, but which as an athlete, as an individual athlete, not in a team sport, is very important.
Yeah.
You have to be focused on self in order to make sacrifices at other people's, expense, I guess, because it's either your responsibility or it's not at all. So you have to be that way.
Yeah.
And just the pressures were getting more and more, like having pressures of a family, moving abroad, and everything started to really mentally take its toll on me.
Okay.
And then there was this underlying with that there was then this underlying feeling of, what am I actually doing with my life here? Like, I'm selling a lot of sneakers every week. I mean, I wasn't in stores, I was in the head office buying director, but it's like, what is the point in this? Like, what am I contributing to society, and what impact am I having? And I didn't feel like I was having any. So there was this like knocking inside of me of like, what's your purpose? You can do more than this. Like you're
Right.
destined for different things to this, to feel like I'm contributing back. And so that knocking grew louder. And when I then put the pressures of the environment I was in, and then the lack of fulfillment. So like everything that I was thought my happiness was attached to around material possessions, like I've got the car, I've got the job, I've got the houses, I go on the holidays, yada 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 yada, all the material stuff which life has conditioned a lot of us to be happy with. That is
Sure,
happiness,
sure.
right? When you got the car in the driveway, I've made it. But then you want more, and then more, and then more. So this thing around like consumption, convenience, and comfort is essentially, and that's quoting a good friend of mine, David Mill, who works in the same space, essentially is a thing that is the rot. And that was a thing that just like led to me, like I'm just chasing, 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 and it's a never ending conveyor belt. And so all of that came to a head, and I really went through a whole realization of like, oh, I need to get out, I need space, I can't breathe. And essentially, when I look back now, that was a burnout. That was classic burnout, and driven through this thing of not feeling like I'm having any meaning.
Yeah.
And then so I was like, right, I need to just like push everything away. I need some space. So I got out of my job, my career, my 20-year career. I was like ejector seat. I got out of my relationship. I got out of a lot of friendships, which were not serving me, which were fueling this, and we're going to talk about masculinity here, this fueling this immaturity of, just not a, I didn't feel like I'd grown up. I didn't feel like I was mature. And so yeah, that led me to the space of like, right, I need some space. I need to go and sort myself out. Didn't quite know what that meant. I just felt like I needed to understand myself more. Like really get into like the truth of me. Like, what do I really want? And why am I so reactive? Why am I just like frustrated? Like, what is it? Couldn't put my finger on it. And then I went into this whole space of discovering, like self-discovery. Like going back to my childhood. What was my childhood like? Like, how did my parents show me love? Like, what were my friendship circles like? Like, what was my life at school like? And then actually understanding that all of that forms how I am in later life. And then it just came apparent that there's looking at mental health, like big time mental health, because I went to a real deep hole of depression when all of these material things were taken away from me at the time of COVID. I couldn't get back into employment because nobody could get back to employment, really. It was a tough
Yeah.
time. And so like the things that I attached my success to were disappearing. And I eventually was just left with just me. And I was like, wow, I've got no worth here. I've got no value. And then that was when it came around these real deep, dark thoughts of like, well, maybe I'm better off not here.
Right.
And so that took me into this real space of trying to understand mental health. Like, wow, what is, from somebody who was a high achiever, Mr. Smash Through the Walls and just like win at all costs, to suddenly be this guy who couldn't get out of bed, had no motivation, was just like, it's not worth it. And that was really scary for me. And then I went into all this space of learning about how the mind works, all about nervous system regulation, all about communication, all about relationships, all about love, all about being a father, all of this stuff. And I was like, wow, like why was I not taught this at school? Like why was I not taught this by my father? Or this is really important. And then I was like, okay, I need to do something about this because I'm a father. And I was like, I've got responsibility over my child, my young boy and my young girl. Like, I'm not going to let them find this stuff out accidentally following a burnout at 40 years old. And so I was like, right, I need to go into this. And I started learning these techniques to be teacher trained, and then started learning stuff like breath work, mindfulness, cold water therapy, movement, everything simple stuff,
Yeah.
especially coming from a background of fitness where I'm like, I should know all this stuff, but I don't. And then, of course, that got linked through to understanding about the root cause of like my own identity was around my own masculinity of like, wow, like what is a mature masculine man look like? What do you mean he feels? What do you mean he's attached to his emotions? What the hell are emotions? And
Yeah.
how do I express them? How do I express them in a safe way? And how do I hold space for others? And how do I not get reactive, being a father or being in a relationship? And then I was like, oh my God, there's like I need to do something. So then I decided to get out of my career, like done. There's something calling me over here, the calling, like this feels like fulfillment of purpose. And then I thought, right, I need to do something to do some good straight away. And I decided to walk from John O'Groats to Land's End, the full length of the
Okay.
country,
Yeah.
for men's mental health and suicide prevention. having experienced really poor mental health myself and just being shocked by it, how I ended up in that state. And as I posted my story, as honestly as I've shared it with you now, got so many people that I didn't know, or so many people from who I used to work with, just to say, Andy, wow, thank you for sharing that. I get that. I'm in that, or I've been going through that for years. Like, thank you for speaking out. And
Brilliant.
so many guys joined me on the way down, on walking with me on days, and I joined men's groups. And it was just, I got to the end of the 9 weeks and I was like, this is it. This is like this. I don't know how it's going to look, but this is my calling. And I've been on a lot of own men's retreats myself, and like getting in touch with what healthy masculinity looks like, and being vulnerable in front of other guys, and like holding space for guys. And I was like, okay, that feels like it. I've managed the best of the best in the world as athletes. Like, I know what an amazing experience looks like. Like, I want to do an amazing experience, because the stuff I was doing was okay, but it wasn't the sort of stuff that I would organize myself. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna take this expertise here, and I'm gonna bring in like the best facilitators in human systems, the best facilitators in breath work, in manifestation, visualization, the best in their fields, in innovation itself, from the world of sport, because the world of sport is what I know. I know corporate, I know world of sport, and I know a bit of ancient wisdom now as well, which is really the simplicity, right?
Yeah.
And that was where, and zero came about, the retreat came about, zero, because actually I got stripped down to zero, and I couldn't rebuild until I realized that I was nothing. Like, what am I left with? And then from there, that was where the rebuild came to then starting again. So that's the whole story of how I got to sit in front of a screen with you today, Nathan.
When you're at your lowest point, what initially started you to rebuild in terms, was it like the education? Was there a specific education? Did you go on a specific men's retreat, or was it just an overall thing that you just had to do? You realized you had to do something, you didn't know where, like you've mentioned. So you were just picking and choosing a bit of everything to gain knowledge and then build backups.
Yeah, what the initial start was actually around the basics of mindfulness,
Okay.
and I was, and because I was like in my immature masculine behaviors, which is very ego-led, like strong ego, like it's all about me and I'll like win at all costs. That's a classic immature masculine trait, if you like. Not that the ego is bad. We all need the ego, because the ego actually moderates how we actually behave in the world. But
Yeah.
like somebody said to me that had an impact, it's like, you need to sort your ego out, Andy. And I was like, oh shit. And I'd heard it before, but this impact actually made a difference from this person. And I started to look into that, like, okay, like what is ego? And then I actually very quickly got led into this whole understanding of psychology, of the difference of what is this little reactive thing in me that is like, it's all about me and I don't care about you. And so I very quickly, the first book I read was Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, being very present in the moment, and actually then what that moment, that space gives you, or gave me, and the peace, the calm, the ability to respond versus reacting, and responding from actually my heart. And this again sounds weird for this, for me, a guy, saying respond from my heart. Like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I'd have been, respond from your heart, what are you talking about? Get
Yeah.
out of here. Like, I've just been like Mr. Blue touch paper react. Like, and this is where it comes from up here, the logic, the.
Yeah.
And so yeah, so that was very much the big first point of like, okay, like who is reacting here, who is speaking here, when I am like, ah, that's not me actually, it's not actually what I want. So it was like, that was the first start of like understanding, like, what are these emotions, like what's underneath them, because actually it's not me at all.
Okay. Do you feel then that's the concept of transformative masculinity, which is we're going to dive deep into a little bit today? Do you feel that that's where it starts then? The concept of it is looking at the person's ego, where they're at with their life. Would that be how you describe it?
Yeah, so a summary for me is my ability to father myself.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, and father myself in a healthy way. So I've still got my little me, my little Andy, my boy psychology when I was a 7-year-old is still in here, as is little Nathan, as is everybody else who's watching this. And we know that because you can pick up on the behaviors or the reactions that come up very quickly. Like, I've got a 9-year-old boy and a 6-year-old girl, and they are just like little balls of reaction all the time. It's like they have a need, a boundary gets overstepped, and they just go back, like, oh, where's mine? I want more. I want this. Okay. And so that's still in me. And that's always going to be there. But it's my ability to integrate the young immaturity and the needs and the demands of, like, no, it's okay. I hear what you need. I've got you there. I've got myself. Like, that is not how I need to respond in the situation. I need to take a breath. I need to downregulate my nervous system. And then from there, I can speak, and I can speak when this is switched on and not switched off. When you get into fight or flight, when my kids scream, they're all like, they're up in fight or flight, and they're like, ah, that's not a calm response, is it? I
Yeah,
know the difference
no.
with my kids. And yeah, so for me, it's all about my ability to father myself, which is like a layer one, if you like,
Okay.
of healthy masculinity. Next one is actually understanding how to be present and how to put myself in that space. Which again is actually physical. We're talking about nervous system capacity here. And yourself and anybody watching this, listening, it's like when I'm maxed out and I've got work on top of me, I've got house, I've got jobs, I've got all sorts, it's like you're maxed out at your capacity. You can't take any more. And so if somebody comes in with something that just like straw that breaks the camel's back, that's saying,
Absolutely.
like that's where it's like you just like there'll be snappiness, there'll be whatever. But ask that question on a different day when you're chilled out, and they're going to get a response, not a reaction. And so for me, like a lot of the physical practices and the mental practices, whether it be meditation, whether it be going for a walk in the sunlight for 5 minutes every morning, whether it be getting in the ice bath every day, which I do, which I need, which I is like an absolute necessity for me,
Yeah.
whether it be movement, that can be yoga, it can be martial arts, it can be whatever. So the first element of transformative masculinity, healthy masculinity, was about my ability to father myself. The second element of that is actually my ability to remain present in any moment. And what I mean by that is to remain calm and centered. And that's a question of my nervous system state. So when I'm agitated, when I feel overwhelmed, then my nervous state is going to be out of parasympathetic, which is rest and digest, and into fight or flight sympathetic, which is ready for action, ready for fight, ready for flight. So that's raised heart rate. That's like immune system switched off, digestion switched off, reproduction switched off. The prefrontal cortex, main logical part of the brain, switches off when we're in
Yeah.
fight or flight. And then you switch very quickly to the limbic protective system, which is all about quick, fast reactions, get out. And rightly so, we wouldn't be sitting here today as the process of evolution if we didn't have those neurological pathways, the safety mechanisms. But it's like a big part of my learning was understanding what was going on inside me. Neurologically, physiologically, to go, I get why I'm really reactive. I get why this response is coming up. But then for me, it's like, right, like how do I train that? And that's training through maximize, like literally pushing my nervous system to its edges, and then using modalities to calm myself down. So getting in an ice bath every day is part of my training. I get in the ice bath, it's a stressful situation. My body reacts, floods my system with neurotransmitters, adrenaline, noradrenaline, dopamine, fight or flight, like get me the heck out of here. But then I use a couple of breaths, the training in my breath, deep breaths, diaphragmatic breathing, to then downregulate my nervous system into parasympathetic very quickly. So the next time I'm shocked by something, it's not a shock to me because I'm used to it, but also I can use my breath to very quickly downregulate.
Yeah.
So that can be in any situation, like my children coming at me full of hell about something and not reacting back, not getting bitey, or in a relationship, or somebody at work, or road rage, whatever. It's like just take a breath. Like, and that is why breath work is so important, because the breath is actually how we breathe directly affects our nervous system state. Yeah, so fathering myself, being present. And then the key one of that as well is having clear direction and purpose as well in my life. Like, what am I doing here? Like, where am I going? Like, I get in the car and I know the destination I'm going to. I know how to get there. Most people in life have jobs and they know what they're achieving in their jobs. They have the company's strategy and direction. Like, you'll know what TRX's is.
Yeah.
But actually, what is my own personal strategy in my life? What is my mission statement? Where am I heading to? Like, Simon Sinek's work is great on this, like finding your why statement. So they're for me, like the main three, and all of that is hinged to mental fitness, physical fitness, like emotional fitness. And I use the word spiritual fitness. That's like the real deeper sense of stuff. And
Okay.
it's not that it's attached to religion. And I'm always careful when I use the spiritual word, because can scare a lot of guys off, and people get like, oh, it's religious. It's not at all. So for me, my own spirituality is just like, how well do I know myself? like my best version of myself, and then I put the best version of myself out, and then I get the best version of the world back.
Okay. Brilliant, mate. Thank you for that. And has there been a pivotal moment in your journey up till now where you've really felt the impact of embracing that transformative masculinity?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest impact for me has been, well, the two is my deep relationships with people close to me in my life. It's we always end up taking it out on the people closest to us when actually they're the ones that we love the most. And yet why do we react so badly? Things like that. So, and actually close relationships are our biggest mirrors. And don't forget this, like a reaction back is a mirror. It's like, what is this situation showing me about me? Like, what is the discomfort here?
Yeah.
And being a father of two young kids, I mean, like, kids know how to push my kids know how to push my buttons every which way but loose. Like, they're just like,
Pretty sure
burr,
every kid, yeah, every kid knows how to push parents' buttons.
it's amazing, right? And
Yeah.
it's like, wow, it's like, oh, like, and also trying to break the mold of how I was, the experience of my childhood. No fault to my parents at all, at all. My grandfather was World War II, came back from World War II, PTSD, as with so many other military servicemen,
Yeah.
from and came straight back into normal life and was back to work the week that they got back with no support. And then my father was born just after that. And so very, very different times to be brought up, very, very different ways of being the traditional Marlborough man, with like, be stoic, be tough, don't show your emotions, don't share,
Yeah.
discipline, all of that. Really, really tough. We're only two generations removed from that. So it's really, really still close.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, I'm finding personally. I think it's the form of trying to be efficient as much as possible, just in work and everyday life. So, if I'm given a task with work, for example, I just like to get it done as soon as possible. And anything that gets in the way, that's when I start getting a little bit. So even looking at not living in the moment, just looking at trying to get things done as soon as possible. So in my mind, I think, well, then I'm done because then I can relax and live in that moment. But then that never comes because there's always more tasks. So I found it was more probably, I don't know whether you can relate to it with your job, but it was that I just want to get things done so they're done. And then I can start thinking about it because if I don't get it done, there's just that pressure ongoing of I need to get this done, I need to get this done, I need to get this done. I mean, have you found that in your career as a whole as well?
Yeah, that's that whole process of living in the future.
Yeah.
And depression comes from rumination on the past. Anxiety is fear of the future or worry about the future. And for example, there is you're worrying about something that needs to be done in the future. So you're time traveling. Your mind has taken you to something that hasn't happened yet and might never happen. So the worry might be completely pointless. And yet you're only in this moment right now. We're only living this moment right now. Yes, stuff happened in the past, stuff will happen in the future, but no, we can only experience this. And what I noticed is when I became much more present, and by that I mean doing a lot of meditative practices, like literally sitting every day meditating. It doesn't have to be a lot, it does not have to
Yeah.
be a lot, but it's that initial understanding of just focusing in the moment, because that helps to train focus. Of when you notice yourself going into thought and you pull yourself back into focus on maybe my breath or like a sensation or like the temperature, whatever that is, a sense, because you can't focus on a breath in the future and you can't focus on one in the past. That's why meditation has always hinged around focus on your breath, because when you're on your breath, you're not able to time travel. Your mind can't do two things at once. So that, yeah, and being in a really high pressure corporate environment, there's always like stuff going off everywhere. And when you're constantly in this stress state of fight or flight, like I said before, when we were living in caves 70,000 years ago, running from a tiger once every 3 weeks, that was our stress. That was it. Now we get stressed, the same physiological response within us, like chronic all day, every day, emails, road rage, kids, it's like just da, 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 all over the place. And if you think about the fight or flight response, shuts the immune system down, shuts the digestive system down, turns off our reproductive capabilities. If you're doing that all the time, then there's no wonder we get ill and stressed. And then you layer into that poor diet, which again is more stress. Just unrefined sugar, so refined sugar in the body is just the same physiological, neurological response as seeing a saber-toothed tiger. Like it does the same things. And then you layer into that lack of sleep, which is horrendous. Then you layer into that not drinking enough. Then you layer into that just all the bait, like not getting enough, the right amount of sunlight, daylight, not moving properly. When you layer all of that in, it's like they're the pretty simple things, and they're free as well, which is nice. If you don't, but staring at these things late at night, I mean, you just look at all of that, and then it's like, no wonder I am completely wired all the time, and I feel anxious and I feel stressed. Like there is no. Oh, and then you watch the news, and then that's designed to only say bad news, because negativity bias, we're drawn naturally to the bad things in life. We have to be, otherwise we wouldn't be sitting here. So like when you understand how this thing works, for me that was like, oh wow, okay, that's a different kettle of fish altogether. Now I understand me a little bit more.
Absolutely. How do you balance then the expectations of, in inverted commas, like a traditional man with like a personal journey now of trying to redefine what it means to be a man in today's world?
Yeah, so for me, this came into something a little bit deeper. Call it woo-woo if you like, which I'm also open to a lot of woo-woo. Woo-woo is only stuff that science can't explain, by the way. Like it wasn't long ago we thought the Earth was flat. So let's put this like the guys back then that said it's round, they're going, you're woo-woo. No, I'm pretty sure it's round. I've just got this hunch. And they were right. But and hey, there's definitely some stuff out there that probably isn't legit, like the double-decker bus on the moon sort of stuff. That's probably not right. Yeah, but the balance, if you like, is around like, okay, so what is a masculine energy? Like when you walk into a room and you see a guy and you go, and there's something about them, he just feels masculine. Like, what is it? Like his presence, right? Like somebody has a presence, that's not woo-woo, right? But there's something about the energy, it's about posture, it's about confidence. Maybe there's a feeling of safety in this guy as well, perhaps. Like, well, what is that? What is the safety in that? Maybe he's not reactive. Maybe you can understand that you can talk to him and you can bring anything to him, and he will respond in a way that is supportive, respond in a way that is gonna, you're gonna feel protected by it. I don't mean physically. So it's like you what an unsafe masculine energy feels like, and the same with a feminine energy as well. Now, the thing here is like I'm attaching a masculine energy to a guy. And I'm attaching a feminine energy to a woman. And actually, I am made up of a balance of masculine energy and feminine energy. And what I mean by that is my masculine aspect of me, of how I'm made up, is all about purpose, direction, strategy, like action, doing, forward motion. So if you think of the military, an example of that, it's like delivery, design, implement, and do. And then my feminine aspect of me is actually the aspect of me which is all around love, which is all around creation, flow, innovation, changing here, going there, movement in a way, like expression. So when I started to understand this, that was a bigger understanding of, okay, it's not just about the old type of traditional masculine, which was provide, protect, and conquer, the old patriarchy, which when we were all at wars all the time, which we still are. You've got to look at the requirements of that to defend the country. You needed to send guys to war disconnected from their feelings and just thinking with their egos, because that's what you needed to send guys to die, right? So it's like that is not needed so much anymore, especially when we've got a women's opportunity in society now. Like women don't need guys to provide for them. Women are able to go there and have amazing careers, and they don't need guys. Not in that sense. And the protection bit isn't really needed anymore, because physically safe, in our society is pretty safe at the moment. So it's like, yeah, it's like what is needed from us? And actually it's this ability of being able to take creations, to take innovations and make things happen and put them into practice. And also the capacity to hold space and be present, like to be grounded in a situation when stuff's going off. It's like, how grounded are you? You do a lot of events. Like if something's not going right and everyone's flapping around you, are you the calm, centered pillar of calmness, of let's go to Nathan. Nathan will know what to do. Like that's your masculine energy, if you like, rooting you into the ground because you've done a lot of breath work, because you meditate, you're not up in your head in fight or flight. This is turned on, parasympathetic, and everybody gravitates towards you because you're safe. It's like, this is a tough situation. Let's go to Nathan, he'll know what to do. So that for me, like, is the subtle shift, if you like, of what I really see. And how that's come through in me, if that answers the question.
Yeah, it does, Andy. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. You've mentioned some practical tools that you use. We've talked about ice baths, meditation, so on and so forth, fitness. So could you just go into your daily routine a little bit in terms of what you do on a daily basis and how it benefits you, and why you mentioned ice baths in the morning, why you do them at certain times of the day? Can you just go through into a little bit of detail like that?
So I get up early, normally around 6 a.m. Get up downstairs, grab a coffee, which is actually the guys who were on the retreat who partnered with us, Exhale Coffee, amazing healthy coffee. And also I use functional mushroom powders as well. So the guys at Grass & Co. are part of retreat partnership going forward as well. And functional mushrooms, because they really help my cognitive abilities as well. And again, this is a new space everyone's moving into, but just put a bit of that in. Then I'm straight outside. So that's maybe like 4 minutes of doing that. And that's like more of a ritual. Like my morning is about ritual. It's about consistency. So I know exactly, am I like on autopilot and I'm not checking my phone? It's because I'm very present. So I get up, make the coffee, straight outside into the ice bath, sitting there for 4 minutes, out of there. Then I do some basic movement, but then I go from there, straight from there, like towel down, quickly chuck my gear, and then I go and do some more rigorous movement. Now I used to use rings, and then of course I got to meet you guys, TRX. So now I use my of course I got to plug TRX. Then I'm on the TRX system, which is amazing as well. So and this is all about building my physical strength, but it's about putting my body in positions of very slow, gradual stress. It's not about going in the gym and me smashing a load of weights. And my one of the guys I have on the retreat, Paul Winsper, he's an absolute legend. I know
Yeah,
you've got a
he's.
conversation with him as well.
Yeah, good man.
Like incredible human system. Head of innovation at Under Armour, athlete innovation at Nike, worked with the likes of David Beckham, Maro Itoje, Trent Alexander, and Anthony Joshua. And he comes on board, and the work that we've done there is all about, he says, no, you don't go in a gym and just smash it. It's like, well, it's all about real slow, gradual movements of getting the finer detail right. So like for me on the TRX, like it's really hard when I slow it all down, because
Absolutely.
then of course what I'm doing is putting my body under in a stressful situation, going back to the nervous system capacity, using my breath to really slow and keep myself controlled, and not in a point where I'm losing focus, because if I start thinking about an email, I'll lose my balance completely and I'll be out of there. So it trains my trains my mental presence, nervous system awareness and alertness and capacity, at the same time as developing the physical power of my muscles as well. So it's like it does all of that. And I'll do that one day, and then the other day I'll switch to yoga, and then like maybe 2 or 3 days a week I'll do a bit of cardio as well. So mainly on the rowing machine, because I can't run so well anymore because I broke my legs basically when running for 15 years. And in there as well, that in the ice bath, I'm able to just drop into a really deep meditation as well. So it's all about, it's not about like loading my day up with 3 hours worth of retreat stuff. It's not possible. It's like, what can I do to condense it into a sizable chunk? And this is what we train at the Zero Retreats. It's like, we're not here to like, so you need to extend your day by 4 hours. It's like, what can you do that's small now to give you the big gains of in a year's time when you've done 4 minutes every day? Like, that's the absolute key for us.
And in terms of movement, you've mentioned there you use the TRX suspension training, which is great. Is the aim for you to move exercise more to do with cognitive behavior more than actually strengthening the body, increasing VO2 max, so on and so forth?
Well, yeah, I'm definitely not interested in my VO2 max now. My max is gone. My max is now min.
I'm sure it's pretty good, like if we compare to other people, let's say.
I think my calves would go pop before I got anywhere near my max. For me, like my whole concept of movement has totally changed, because my concept of movement as a runner was to make this thing go as fast as it could. Again, my impatience there, my striving, it was just like I got injured in like the wrong mindset. I wasn't compassionate enough, if you like, in my own treatment of this. Like, oh, just run through it, just run through it. So now for me, it's to try and get enjoyment out of it. And I saw an amazing campaign, I can't remember who, it might have been ASICS or somebody, and they interviewed a lot of adults why they exercise. And it's like, oh, I exercise to get a better body, or like I need to lose weight, or it was all like these, like to do, to must, I must, must. And then they interviewed a lot of kids, and the kids were like, because we do it because we have fun, and I get to play with my mates, and it's really exciting. And you look at the difference, like, so it's how can I bring my movement routine back in? So I'm doing it for enjoyment. And so it gives me joy and it gives me pleasure at the same time as more so now, it's more about my mental and cognitive health, which is massively aligned to the ability to, for me to move and actually just perform better in a way that has all the systems firing and keeping them healthy.
On the gym, and you've mentioned that you ASICS, if it was ASICS, and I need to check this campaign, actually, we'll put it in the show notes if we can find it, of interviewing adults and there's certain goals. And like you've said, most people want to lose weight or tone up, so on and so forth. Do you think that even the pressures now of social media have added to that? Actually, the enjoyment of movement, whether you're in the gym or sports, has gone for a lot of men and a lot of women, because of the impact that social media has done over the years, especially if you look at Instagram with fitness videos left, right, and center, what to eat, what not to eat. Ice baths, we've talked about it, and I'm a big fan of ice baths, but they are 10 to a penny now on social media. It's the mantra. If you haven't posted on social media that you've done an ice bath, have you actually done one? So
Yeah.
what's your opinion on social media masculinity and actually being a bit mindful on that whole subject now?
Yeah, for me it's like it's easy to post something or to do something on camera, and you see it all the time. People take and post the stuff like random acts of kindness. It's like, yeah, really? Or was that done just for the camera? I'm interested in what is that person like for the other 364 days of the year. Like it's dead easy to go, oh, today I'm going to post about doing an ice bath on social media. I'm going to get my robe out. I'm going to do this and get my coffee and like make it look all nice. And yeah, I've done that. Check that box. No, I don't need no. And then what did you do the next day? Oh, well, I didn't do it. Why not? Oh, because I couldn't be asked. You know, like you, if you take all this stuff away, it's like, are you really still committed to doing it? So why are you doing it? So the ultimate thing is, well, why are you doing it? If you're doing it for likes, if you're doing it for external validation, then you gotta be the invitation there is to just be really aware of why you're doing something. Like, and if you are doing it for a load of likes or loads of comments, it's like, wow, it's like, so you need that validation from somebody else to make you feel better about yourself. So actually that's a massive question of self-worth. And that's the challenge with social media, it's a huge spotlight for people's reliance on not actually thinking that in themselves, I'm really happy with myself. To hell with what other people think. They need to go and do these things. They need to post once that they've done an ice bath. So they get loads of guys going, oh, yeah, great. Well done. Yeah, me too. Oh, it feels better about myself. No, I don't need to do it now because I feel better about myself.
Sure.
And then that's why they don't do it for another 2 weeks. And this was a big thing for me around my own external validation as well. It's like I had low self-worth. And like again, like the question of that. So why was that? But I mean, you just got to look at the stats of obesity and health and the state of the nation, just the UK's Western world's health. Like, if social media was such a good thing and it was doing such a good job, and gym memberships were doing such a good thing, and like mass participation runs were doing such a good thing, why is everything worse? Like, there's something fundamentally not right. And my underlying premise of the whole thing is just like this culture of strive, 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 of comparing to everybody else, comparing to who the neighbors, what the neighbors' cars got, like just this complete society of consumption. And
Absolutely.
why?
And yeah, I mean, going back. And I totally agree with what you're saying, because going back to the social media part for a second, we have quite a huge following on social media, which we're very, very grateful. And I'm privy to quite a lot of content that we receive. And actually, I found over the years, and we've probably been looking after the social media in the UK specifically for about 5 years, the amount of guys, let's say, that will get in touch with us because they've tagged us in a post and then said, "Why haven't you liked our post? Why haven't you reshared it?" is through the roof. I would say it's 95% male, and maybe this is just us, and 5% female, where they'll say, "I've taken the time to do this. Why aren't you liking it? Why aren't you sharing it?" So on and so forth. Do you feel that, like you say, you go with your worthiness? Do you think, again, social media has a negative impact? Because even if you're creating videos for likes, but then even if you're sending it to a company that you follow and you're inspired to, because we do good stuff, and there's loads of companies like that, including yourself with Zero Retreats, that to me is a negative impact, because to me it makes no sense. So I want to turn around to that person and say, Look, why are you that bothered? It's not a big deal. We get videos all the time. A lot of the stuff we don't reshare anyway. Why is it to the point? I mean, in your opinion, I mean, I can't explain it, to be honest with you. I just feel it goes over my head because I don't understand how much a like would mean from a company to like someone's video. Now I've mentioned that to you, where do you see that? Is that they really need to step back from social media and have a like a total break?
Well, no, what that is, they're not being honest with themselves about their own expectations, and that's a covert contract that they're actually putting you into without knowing it. So if I'm gonna do a post, which I've done with you guys in it, can't remember if you liked it or not, I don't
I
know.
think we
But
did,
it's like,
yeah.
yeah, I mean, you might have done, yeah. But it's like for me, it was like, I'm really proud that TRX, like super proud that you guys wanted to be associated with my event. And I'm like, wow, like this is amazing. Like putting it out there, but there was no expectation of me of you to then re even like it, whatever, like because it just wasn't there. So there was no expectation, therefore I can't, if there's no expectation of me, I can't get disappointed if you don't like it or not. So that person is setting themselves up for disappointment, and also it's a covert contract that they're setting up with you. So it's like, I'm going to put this out there and they'd better like it.
Yeah.
Oh well, they didn't like it. Well, why didn't they like it? And then, of course, then the stories start going on, and the stories start going on. What am I not? Why don't they like it? Like, is it not right? Is it not enough? Like, am I not enough? And then, holy crap, like, I'm just not worth it. And then they go down this thought spiral, and then the thought spiral puts them into this state of fight or flight. What comes out of fight or flight? Aggression. Like, well, anger, and then anger turns into aggression. Aggression is anger which is pointed outwards towards somebody else. And that can be physical aggression, passive aggression, like sarcasm, rolling of eyes. That's aggressive behaviors, right? And that's all immature behaviors. And so that person's then putting it out there, and it's like that, like your response there could be, thank you for sharing that with me. End off. And then, of course, how they choose to respond to that'll probably piss them off. Oh, I can't believe what you don't feel for me. You don't understand how sad I feel. So I'd say, well, explain your feelings. Like, hey, I just wanted you to know that actually I put this post out there and my expectation was this. Of course, you didn't know that. So I felt a bit sad by it. But, and even then, it's like, really? And this is this whole thing about fathering yourself. If that person was fully aware of themselves, of this need to be externally validated, if the person is really aware of why they're on social media in the first place, I need it for validation. Like, I'm going to post Nike. Are Nike going to tag back? Probably not. Because
No.
Nike's expectations, as Nike's purpose and mission, is like, does that person align with my values? Do I want to be associated with that person? Is it worth it? What do I get in return? It's a business transaction. Like, you're not in a transactional relationship with all your followers. Like, they follow. That's the thing. It's followers. Like, you follow. You don't get anything in return. So, and it's nice if you do.
It's always nice. And we, like I say, from a TRX perspective, we work with a lot of our followers, let's say, people that have done our education courses, people that attend to events. I just found it really interesting because apart from looking after the TRX social media or supporting the TRX social media, let's say, I only ever had my personal account. So I never come across these interactions before. And I just found it interesting, but then also quite scary in a lot of ways because it was just. It came across as quite aggressive, and it will still continue. And I just sat back and I thought to myself, well, why is someone really needing the need for us to reshare or even just like their post? I just found it, and it was just to get your perspective on things. So yeah, thank you
And
for sharing that.
as well, what you'll find as well is that look, that's your boundary. Like, your boundary is, hey, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, we may or may not choose to like certain posts. Simple as that, right? That's it. And then say you lose that consumer. Well, is that a bad thing? Because then what you're doing, if you're authentically you as the brand or whatever, and you have clear boundaries, then that's who you are. That's how you want to live your life. That's how you want your relationships to be in with, whether it be a business relationship or a loving relationship. Like, this is me. And that's when you really know you. And this is this whole thing about come to zero. It's like you really find out who you are. So then you can go back into life and you can state, right, this is me. This is what I stand for. These are my values. These are my beliefs. These are my boundaries. And anybody who doesn't agree with that will bounce off and go off somewhere else. And that's okay. Because it's not aligned to you anyway. So that's just going to make your life difficult. The challenge is with so many lives, and me in my journey, it's like I didn't have any boundaries. And when you don't have boundaries, you're like people pleasing everywhere. It's like, oh, I'll do that, and then I'll fit in over here, or I'll change myself to fit in over there. I wasn't authentically me. Like people with a lot of friends, like they're a little bit of a warning, because how can you be that friendly with everybody? Like, who is the real you? You know, if you're that thinly. So like again, this part of the journey is like, so like there's a great book called No More Mr. Nice Guy by Glover, and that's a brilliant one. It really stands out as highlighting immature masculine behaviors. And someone like that example there is classic. Like how well when was the last time you checked in on yourself, on those feelings that are going off inside you? And again, it's like just the inner child stuff. Like the little version of him is put out is in a strop, in a huff. It's like that's not true.
No,
Yeah,
absolutely not. No, absolutely
good
not.
example though. Nice example, yeah.
Yeah, I thought I'd definitely bring this to the conversation. So yeah, thank you for sharing
Yeah.
your opinion on that one. Let's talk about your retreats. So
Yeah.
zero retreats, what happens in them? Who could take part? Feel free to just spread the word.
Yeah. So yeah, what's it about? So my background was corporate, was sport, elite level sport, top level, and my journey is taking me into ancient wisdom practices and really understanding myself. It's a you want to call it like a it's a I'm going to use the word school, but it's a 3 day, at the moment they're 3 days in remote locations, really nice accommodation, amazing food, and I bring in the best facilitators in their field. So my business partner and also facilitator when it comes to structuring the purpose element of the retreat. So we help guys find their purpose. Tom Waller, head of innovation, ex-head of innovation for Lululemon and Adidas, now head of innovation for Decathlon. He brings in a lot of his learnings from that space. And then we have Paul Winsper. He is our human systems specialist I was telling you about earlier. Paul was the first sports scientist of the Premier League in the 90s. He then was headhunted by Nike to head up their elite athlete innovation division. Then he went to Seattle Seahawks, Canada Maple Leafs, and then he was headhunted again by Under Armour to head up their whole global athlete innovation center. So there is nothing that Paul doesn't know about how the human body works,
No.
and for the best athletes in the world, like he's at the frontier of all this crazy, amazing stuff. But what I like about Paul is he's also tapping in recently to a lot of the ancient wisdom practices as well. So he's the perfect blend of like mad scientist, elite level sport, and also really open to ancient wisdom techniques as well, and we just blend it all in. Then we've got Natalie Stewart. Natalie is incredible breathwork practitioner, also works with emotional release and with guys, like releasing our emotions. We're taught to push it down, so she brings through a lot of the practices around really understanding the impact of what not expressing our emotions does to us, and it puts us into dis-ease instead of ease. And so Natalie also works with the manifestation piece as well, alignment with Tom, deep breathwork practices to tap into subconscious to see our visions of the future. And then bring in Christian Malcolm. Christian Malcolm is our only sprinter to have ever got four Olympics. Incredible guy, like 20 seconds flat pretty much, and nearly 10 seconds flat for 100 and 200.
Yeah, amazing.
World medalist. But Christian also went into the world of federation coaching. So he heads up. He's head of UK Athletics, Australian Athletics Federation, and he's currently working with the Irish team in the build-up to Paris. So he's about to head out to World Relays. And Christian brings through a lot of mindset, a lot of goal setting, and a lot on movement as well. So Paul does a lot of movement pieces using TRX, which we bring on every morning. We use ice. So I bring through a lot of the ritual pieces, the masculinity elements as well, really getting the guys together, really tapped into a real deep level of vulnerability and an amazing connection, actually, which makes the container just a really powerful container for change.
Brilliant.
A guy coming who is feeling a bit lost, stuck in life, maybe he's not getting what he wants out of his physical health. He's feeling a lot of pressures mentally. He's not able to understand how to shut off. He just wants a bit of space, but actually he also doesn't have a real clear direction in life, or he's lost his direction. It's like, I'm bloody good at what I do, but it's just there's something not right. I'm not fulfilled. Or also in relationships as well, either romantic relationships or fatherhood. And yeah, it's a jam-packed 3 days. We bring in breath work, ice bath, solo night hike as well, where it's an
Nice.
amazing time for contemplation, which is really nice. Dump them in the middle of nowhere, and you gotta find your way back in the middle of the night over the moors. Yeah, incredible food. We got the practices through breath work and what Tom and Nat would bring through. So you go away with we call it like the training plan of
Okay.
actionable goals, which again is go back to the Olympic mindset of you want to get the Olympics in 10 years' time, how are you going to get there? So we actually help the guys build that. So as of tomorrow, like what are you going to start integrating you into your life? Very small bits, one step at a time. So those behaviors can be changed. And then we have the accountability group follow-ups where every 4 weeks we have the Zoom calls of the guys, we bring them back together. Where are you up to on your process? Like, what have you changed? What are you getting stuck with? And every day the guys are on the WhatsApp groups as well, and they're still talking now off the retreats we had.
Oh, that's
And then
good.
bringing them together in smaller one-day events. So we just had an amazing sweat lodge down in Devon, which was incredible. That was a really powerful experience with another amazing facilitator, Michael Maisie. And yeah, and so we've got plans for one in September, October, November. So yeah, we're just working on the amazing locations. Probably Wales is definitely going to be one up in the
Brilliant.
Brecon Beacons.
I mean,
Yeah, and up north as well. So yeah, we'll definitely have those. We're aiming to have those dates launch in the next couple of weeks, actually.
yeah, fantastic, Andy. And we'll make sure we definitely put the website and your Instagram on the show notes for people to find out more information about your retreats, which all sound amazing. And I'm sure they're beneficial to everyone that attends. We're going to wrap up soon. So, Andy, just want to say thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it. For men that are beginning their journey, let's say, into transformative masculinity, what advice do you have them to navigate the challenges and make sure they stay committed and positive to the change?
Yeah, I think the key thing about making change with anything, whether it be you buy your first TRX system and you're not going to go and do 6 hours on the first day, it's all about, like I said earlier, it's about small changes for big gains and just being really realistic and honest with yourself. It's like, do you wake up in the morning and hit snooze on your alarm? Like I did it this morning. I don't know about you, Nathan,
Didn't
but
today, but yeah, I have done in the past.
It's a thing, right?
Yeah.
So like I set my alarm the night before, and then I started my day by lying to myself already. Like the first thing I do when I wake up is I lie to myself. It's like, what is that? So it's all about understanding what I'm actually capable of doing, but also the difference between just being lazy as well. It's like it's getting this lighting this fire under my ass, if you like, to get going. But it's just the small changes that you can manage, and then you do one change, and then you layer another one when that one's embedded in. Like habits take 21 days to form, and habits take 21 days to break. But it's just give yourself, like, be honest, like one day at a time, one day at a time, and that's the key thing. And the biggest wins I get from the guys, actually, of on all the groups, the ones where they see the immediate changes, it's always the physical action, it's always the physical actions. And another big one is getting their sleep right as well. So like the cold water is something that all my guys are just find the biggest immediate impact from and a benefit to their life. So
Yeah.
if any guys are watching, like, and again, it's dead easy to start small in the shower, have your hot shower in the morning. Most people shower, and at the end, just turn the cold down very, very gently. And as you're turning it down, just breathe out long and slow. Try and use your belly, your diaphragm breathing, and that activates your calming nervous system, remember. And just try and just long exhales as you're getting cold, and then breathe in through the nose for 4 seconds, hold for two, and then out again if you can for 6 or 8 seconds. And just try and do that. So like shorter inhales, longer exhales, and just do it for like 10, 15, 20 seconds. And it'll feel like, oh, and then afterwards, notice how you feel.
Yeah.
The next day, just do maybe a couple of seconds more. And then you only need 11 minutes a week of cold water exposure. So like if you get an ice bath, 3 to 4 minutes at a time is three, two or three, four times a week is great. I mean, I do it every day, but that's like part of my routine.
Andy, again, thank you very much for your time. I'm sure the listeners and people that watch the video will find this very, very beneficial. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
As we wrap up this episode of the TRX Procast, we want to express our gratitude to Andy Kane for his profound insights and wisdom. As Mental Health Month begins, Andy's journey serves as a timely reminder of the importance of prioritizing holistic well-being and embracing transformative masculinity. Now, as we embark on this month dedicated to mental health awareness, let us remember that the journey towards well-being is ongoing and multifaceted. Whether it's practicing mindfulness, engaging in regular movement with TRX training, or something else, or seeking support from loved ones. Every step we take towards self-care is a step in the right direction. We hope this episode has provided you with inspiration and encouragement to prioritize your mental health and well-being. Remember, you are not alone, and there is strength in seeking support when needed. Thank you for joining us on this journey towards transformative masculinity and holistic well-being. Stay tuned for more empowering conversations and insights on the TRX Procast. See you next time.